Welcome back to Living Our Breast Lives, episode 12, a podcast not only about two women thriving with metastatic breast cancer, but also self-love, appreciation, and overall awakening to this beautiful gift we call life. Each episode, we will be focusing on a different word that will highlight the overall theme of each episode. Please don't forget to not only tune in, but to also subscribe and review.
Welcome back, and thank you for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. My name is Brittany, and with me is Ren.
Welcome back, everyone, and thanks for tuning into episode 12. We have a very unique, yet very inspirational episode for you this week. On today's episode, we've got the mom squad on board. Both mine and Brittany's moms are both here doing separate interviews. Maybe you're asking yourself, why? Well, I will leave you with this. What do you think it's like for a mother-daughter duo to both experience a cancer diagnosis in the same lifetime? And I'll take you one step further. What about two MBC sisters sharing this very similar experience with both their moms as well? It sounds absolutely crazy saying it out loud, but tune in because you are in for a wild ride.
First up is a conversation with my mother, Mama D, Mama Lows, and how fitting we are recording today because 2 years ago was when she got the dreaded yet all too familiar phone call. But I can happily say she is a survivor.
Woo! Go Brittany's mom!
Brittany here, and today I am joined with a special guest, my mom, Diane. Today we're going to be talking about what it's like to be a mother and daughter, both diagnosed with breast cancer. As you all are very well aware, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, and my mom was diagnosed with stage 1 breast cancer. So before we get into it, I'd like to introduce you to my mom. How are you doing today, Mom?
Pretty good. Hi, everyone.
I'm so glad that you're doing this with me because I think it's just going to be a fun episode, even though the subject matter isn't the lightest. So while we get started, you know, our viewers know I was diagnosed in September of 2019, going on, you know, 2.5 years strong with metastatic breast cancer. What was that like as a parent hearing that your daughter had breast cancer?
It was the most devastating news in my entire life. Here I am getting all choked up about it. And it just was very gut-wrenching. It was like, how could this happen? And it was like, you know, we have to do something to stop this. And then you find out what your options are and everything like that. And it was just horrible. But Brittany, you were just such a rock. It was like, okay, this isn't the best news, but you know what? We're gonna pull our sleeves up and we're gonna fight it. And we're going to give it everything we have. And you were just inspirational to not only me, but your father and your brother and so many friends and family around you. You were quite inspirational and quite strong.
Well, thank you. I didn't mean to get you choked up so early on in the episode.
I know. I'm really surprised I got choked up too. Wow. But yeah, it was. It was extremely devastating. And, you know, because people had asked me, oh, well, how'd you feel about it? And I said, very gut-wrenching, you know, it was horrible. But, you know, like I said, you inspired us.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's one of those things that you can't choose what life hands you, but you can choose how you react to it. And I know that I can't change the cards I've been dealt or the situation I'm in, but I'm going to make the most out of it because we still have life to live. So I was diagnosed in September of 2019. You came along and were diagnosed the following spring in April Fool's Day, 2020. But what was it like before you got the diagnosis? What were you going through? Tell us about your journey a little bit.
Well, I just had a routine mammogram, as I do every year. At that time, COVID had just started, so we were still at work. And I came back to my desk, and like within about an hour or so, I got a phone call from the doctor's office saying, hey, we found something, and they used an architectural disorder or something like that.
Distortion, I think you said it was.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yeah. And I thought, what is that? So I had to hurry up and Google it. And then I turned to my friend at the time, who I worked near, and I said, you know, this doesn't sound good. And she goes, oh, you know, it doesn't have to mean it's something serious. And I said, but it's never happened before. And then when they took additional testing, the architectural distortion, they said, you know what, we're going to biopsy this.
Which you were used to because you have had cystic breast your whole life.
Exactly. And I thought maybe, you know, that's just what it is. But since you, Brittany, had just 6 months prior gone through all this, it was like, it became more like, oh, it's not a cyst. It could be something more. But still in the back of my mind, I thought, no, you know, it doesn't sound so bad. An architectural distortion, you know, it doesn't sound like cancer. But anyway, when I was going through the biopsies and everything like that, being that I had been there when you were going through it, it was just so like Groundhog Day, but it wasn't you. This time it was me going through all the steps. And again, through the whole thing, I thought, no, you know, this can't be happening. But then the more testing I got, again, thinking about everything you went through, I thought, this is becoming pretty real. So yes, and I did hear it on April Fool's Day, which I'm like, oh my God, seriously? So yeah, and that was different too, because COVID, you know, started, then I started working at home. So I was very isolated. And you know, the nurse who called was very nice and everything. But again, it was like when you heard the words, you have breast cancer, you just didn't know what to do or say. And my first thought was you, Brittany, because I thought, you know, we've got to focus on Brittany. You know, I can't really be a part of telling my family and my friends that I have breast cancer. It was like, this is the worst timing. We need to have the focus on Brittany. Plus, again, how is my family going to take this news when it was so devastating with you?
So and now yeah, have it was like a really second crazy person time. With it.
Yeah, it was just a really, really crazy time. But yeah. You, my dear, even though I tried so hard to when you called and everything, to just act like everything was fine, then you tell your story, Brittany. About when I finally broke the news.
The minute that she called us before she even opened her mouth, I was like, you have cancer. Like, I just knew. I knew it was coming. And I don't know, but with certain things, I get these very strong intuitions, and I'm not going to go into detail about it, but anything that is pretty monumental, I would say, in life, I get these feelings, and I feel... Well, I don't feel, I know I'm right a lot of the time about
yes,
it.
Yes, you are.
And I don't know why. Yeah, you know, so that's weird. And how was it like finding out you had cancer by yourself? Because I went through a lot of the journey by myself at the beginning, because as you know, you live a good 6 hours away. We didn't know what we were up against. And, you know, my husband was away with work. So I went through a lot of the procedures by myself. But when I actually got the definitive cancer diagnosis, I at least had you and Dad by my side to hear those words. What was it like hearing those words, but because of COVID, not having anyone else around you? And to get it through a phone call, because I got mine in person from a doctor face to face.
Yeah, it was different. The entire medical team, I have nothing but wonderful things to say about them. They were so kind and everything. And this specific nurse who had called me happened to know my daughter, Brittany, and knew about her, you know, breast cancer story and everything. So she had a lot of empathy for what I was going through. And she was the one who had called me. And to say that she broke the news as gentle as possible, that was true. I mean, you know, she tried to be polypositive about, hey, you know, what we can do is get it and you're going to be okay. So yeah, but yet there was still that great deal of isolation though, because, and then again, I just had to sort it through my mind, you know, that this was real. And, my first thought was to you, Brittany. I just wanted that focus to be on you. You know, and I think any mother would. And then, you know, you think the thoughts, hey, you know, I lived a pretty good life. Not that I was trying to, you know, cut myself off saying, okay, this is it. But again, as a parent, I just wanted the focus to be on Brittany. And I just didn't know how I was going to tell anybody because it was crazy. But, you know,
the poor men in our lives, specifically, yes. You know, dad and my brother, Brett, because how do you go from like, all of a sudden, you know, cause we're a small, close knit family of four, half the people in your lives, all the women have cancer. I mean, that I can't imagine what it was like from their standpoint, like kind of almost any of us could go at any time, but the reality that you could lose half your family, like not knowing what way the tables will go, because I mean, life is life and cancer is part of that. And you just never know what way the tides are going to go. So one of the huge things that we discovered, so as I mentioned earlier, my mom was stage one and I was stage four. There's a huge difference in treatment. There's a huge difference in prognosis. And what we found through going through this journey, because honestly, my mom's my best friend, is that we really had to open communication lines between each other, because even though we were battling the same cancer, the same subtype, because she was stage one and considered early stage, and I was stage four and I was considered late stage, we really had to learn to kind of be sensitive to what the other person was feeling and going through. And it's, I don't know, like, I think you talk about it best when you, you know, reflect on what it was like navigating that territory of being sensitive to me being stage four and me trying to be sensitive to you being stage one and what you were going through.
Yeah. I always thought, like I told Brittany, I always felt before her and I got cancer that breast cancer was breast cancer. But then she had made me very much aware of metastatic breast cancer and how they needed to have more funding for it, et cetera. And so here I really got to know the beast a little bit better. And then when I was in the early stage of cancer, I could tell that there was a difference. Like we were each a cheerleader for one another, but at the same time, you could tell that we were on two different teams. And I know that metastatic breast cancer, I mean, wow, you know, that is a pretty tough one to swallow. But I said at the same time, though, for the early stage cancer, we have like two separate journeys here, and we've got to respect each other's journey. And even though my outcome might be a more positive one, you know, we each have our struggles and everything through the type of medicines and help me here, Brittany, where, you know, the chemotherapy and everything.
It's kind of like different. Each type of, each stage has its own traumas to it.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
Right, one of the right. huge things we've talked about, you know, is that, so I get a Zoladex injection every 28 days into my stomach. We like
Which
to call
I
it
could
a,
never do.
Yeah, we like to call it a harpoon. I don't encourage anyone to look up the needle size or gauge, but you know, if you want to know why we call it a harpoon, there you go. And I, you know, take that, I don't know, willingly, because I have to, I don't know. But you know, it's
I think
what
she's
I
crazy.
It's what I do. But here you had to go through the port placement, the mastectomy, the healing from that, then the tissue expanders, and then the actual implant. So there was a lot of surgeries involved. And I've always said, I don't know that I would have been able to go through that. One would say probably the trauma of, you know, the, you know, physically losing your breath, all the losing your hair because of the chemotherapy that you were on. You know, me, I am terrified of hospitals, so knowing I would have to have that many surgeries would just put me in an uncomfortable situation. So I always tell my mom, you know, God gave us each what we can handle. She can't handle needles, I can. She can handle going to a hospital, I can't. But they each have their own traumas, knowing that I'm in this for life and that there's no end sight and that it's always going to be in the back of your head somewhere. How long is this treatment going to last? But then you having the fear, well, yes, I beat this, but now I have the fear of it coming back, you know, instead of looking at it as a battlefield with, you know, the lines drawn, I'm metastatic, you're not, kind of really understanding the emotional toll each diagnosis takes on someone was something that we really had to work on, because you can admit there were certain times it was like all of a sudden you knew you said something, maybe not, but it triggered me and I'm like, that's it, I'm getting off the phone. And
exactly
vice versa. Mm-hmm.
And then what I can recall too is, although you were very happy for me, and Brittany had said, well, at least you got to ring the bell. I mean, and this was probably said, you know, at maybe a point when you maybe had a frustrating day or whatever. And not that you were never happy for me, but it was like, well, you got to ring the bell. But when I rang that bell, it was bittersweet. Part of me was, yay, I'm done with all the chemo infusions. But at the same time, I felt, why was I the one lucky enough to ring the bell and not Brittany? She should be the one ringing this bell. She has more of a life to finish living. So it was, you know, I had to get off that guilt trip of this should be Brittany. This should be Brittany. And that was really, you know, tough for me to do because it just didn't seem fair. But, you know, what Brittany has taught me is, you know, life generally isn't fair. You just got to take the cards that you were dealt and do the best. You know,
and I don't even know that I say life isn't fair. It's kind of like life is life. I try to find the reason
true.
Behind yeah. everything. So like, I'll be honest, when I see, because unfortunately women are getting diagnosed younger and younger with breast cancer. When I do see pictures of them ringing the bell, I don't know why that just like, I'm very sensitive to that because mm-hmm. it's such a joyful moment for them, as it should be. But knowing that I won't have that, at least not with the medicine that we have available right now, although God is the ultimate healer, so I never know what he has in store for me. But, you know, speaking about that, I think I've told you before, you know, and I don't know, but I believe there's a reason for everything. Sometimes I've thought that I don't know that I would be strong enough to live without you. And that's why I had the stage four, just because I can't imagine a life without you in it. And I think I've said before, just in general, when I was first diagnosed, my biggest fear was no longer being a part of our family's narrative that, you know, life goes on and I am not there. especially because it is just the four of us and we are so close. But now you've had the mastectomy, you've had the tissue expanders, you now have the implants, the hair is growing back. You know, it's a way to see different hairstyles you never thought you'd have, you know, YOLO. So what is treatment now for you? You've got the surgeries out of the way. Now, what's your treatment from here on out?
Well, for the first year, I have to see the doctors quarterly. And then the second year, I see them every 6 months. And I believe the third year is when it starts, where I just am a survivor. I'm on a drug for the next 7 years, and that's supposed to decrease my chances of the cancer coming back. But you were thriving, I guess, in like the next, you know, 7 to 10 years to make sure that the cancer doesn't come back. Okay, but that's that something that they can't give you 100% guarantee. You know, I was more drastic with my approach to getting rid of the cancer. Others just will choose a lumpectomy. And this, again, that's a very personal choice you have to make. And it doesn't, you know, come easily, I'm sure, to most patients, but you have to do what you feel is right for you. And I went more of the more, for lack of a better word, more drastic way with the double mastectomy.
And you have to think too, if you had done the lumpectomy and the radiation, even going through that is a lot. And then
it is.
If you had gone through that and realized, heaven forbid it came back, I have to go through this again, like the emotional toll it would take on you. So, yes, I was more drastic because I didn't want to go through this again. Like, you know,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, life is always full of if onlys. And I didn't want this to be if only I had done this at the beginning. And I had a breast surgeon who is a rock star. I mean, I absolutely love her. And we had many lengthy talks, you know, so that kind of helped me decide too, you know, which route I wanted to take. But again, to anybody out there, it's a very personal journey, a personal choice. But I just wanted the best outcome for me, and especially knowing what Brittany was going through, I thought, well, you know, if anything, the cards really aren't stacked in my favor. So I thought, just do what feels right for you. And that's what I did.
And you know, something about statistics, I like to say, I don't like them because I don't believe in them because I'm still here.
Right. That's so true. Yep. But you're a fighter and you were the inspiration. And I think that's probably what gave me a lot of strength through the, you know, whole deal and sense of humor. I always try to look at the funny side of it. Like Brittany would just roll her eyes and she goes, do you stay up at night thinking of these things? But, you know, like when I lost my hair and, you know, I just made fun of it. It was like Uncle Fester from the Addams Family. And she goes, Uncle Fester, but that's who I saw.
Pale white, purple eyes. Like, I think of, what was it, Christopher Lloyd and the Addams Family. I'm like, Mom, you do not look like Uncle Fester. But, you know, it's what you have to do to cope in those situations. So,
yeah. And I was blessed enough with wigs that you throw on your wig yes, she has named them. Yeah. I have a shorter version of my hair and she calls it Dylan, you know,
cause it needs to have like a sexy, feisty name. Like,
Yeah. So, and then when I would pull that off, I'd become Uncle Fester again. So,
Well, I appreciate you so much taking time today to kind of talk about your journey and the mother-daughter experience with it all. I think you and I can both agree and say that having a positive attitude, being able to find laughter in the most uncomfortable of situations, and ultimately having unconditional faith and belief in God is what sees you through this. Is there anything else that you want to add before we sign off that you'd like our listeners to hear?
Just, you can do this. You're going to be amazed. If, you know, this should ever happen to you, you will be amazed how you find the strength. Mm-hmm. But definitely having God hold your hand through the journey, it really does make a big difference. Brittany, I still remember, as devastating as that day was when we heard the news about your breast cancer, I still remember when we were going to get a bite to eat or drink.
And who the heck wanted to do that in the moment?
I know. Let's go for lunch. We were in this park area and music was playing. And Brittany just started dancing and singing to the music. And we were just like standing there or sitting. I'm not sure, quite sure what we were, but I was looking at her and I thought, how can you dance and sing at a moment like this? And Brittany, you'd probably best know what was going through your head at the time.
I mean, I just know what I heard, and the song was saying in that moment, I'm going to get through this. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to get through this. You know, I can't have a podcast without me singing on it. But no, I heard that and I kind of latched onto that and looked at that as God reassuring me that I'm going to get through this. Just like when I had the breast biopsy done, the song by Taylor Swift, Soon You'll Get Better, was playing. And that wasn't a radio hit, but it was on the radio. So I looked at those as signs from God, because everyone knows I love my music, that I'm going to be okay. So.
Yeah. And when she had said that, I thought, wow, you have an incredible faith. And, you know, you're my inspiration. So I thought, heck, you know, if Brittany can do this, so can I. And, you know, God has been with us.
If Brittany can do it, anyone can do it.
Yeah, I'm still not sure about that harpoon needle, but you know.
We each have our things. Well, exactly. Thank you so much for listening, and I'm going to send it back to Ren.
So, Mother, I am very excited to have you on today's podcast to talk about our journeys as the mother-daughter dynamic duo. So, welcome.
Thank you.
So, here's what I want to start with. If anyone wants to know where I get my type A personality from, without further ado, meet the queen of type A, my mother.
I beg your pardon.
I knew you'd appreciate that introduction.
It's okay.
And so it begins. All right. So, Mom, let's just get right into it with your initial diagnosis. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were diagnosed with ovarian cancer, what was it, 8 years ago?
Yes.
Aye, aye, aye. Okay, so with that being said, here is my first initial question. After being in, dare I say, cancer land for already 5 years or so at that point, what was it like as a parent hearing that your daughter has been diagnosed with breast cancer, let alone metastatic breast cancer, a year later?
Well, it was like a slap to the face. Because even as proactive as I had become, and I asked you all to get the BRCA gene test, I still was living in a world of denial that it could ever happen to one of my kids, right, as I think any mom would think. So getting the news from you was just like a very hard hit. But when your child is hurt, and you can't do anything to control it, it's just almost an impossible feeling to deal with.
It's funny that you say that, because in previous episodes, I've talked about how you and I, you know, are fixers. And so lacking control is probably the worst possible thing when going through something like this, because all you want is concise answers, which you rarely get.
When it comes to something as severe as this kind of a disease, no matter how colorful or creative I can be, I still can't be a fixer.
Right. Why don't you go ahead and kind of tell us about your journey as an ovarian cancer survivor, kind of like, you know, where it all started and then where you are today?
It started with me being healthy as a horse, as my mom would say. There are no symptoms, really. I've learned that there are symptoms after the fact, but none that you would stop to take notice of. And I probably had it for years and didn't know it. There's a one of the small symptoms is a drop of blood, like spotting. For me, I mean, I had five kids, so I always was checking down there to make sure there was nothing wrong ever since you were born. I won't get sidetracked. But I went for my gynecological visit. I told them about the spotting. There was nothing else wrong with me, and they wanted to do a biopsy on my cervix. And I said, what for? Like, who wants to go through that? But at the same time, you don't want to say no, because if something happens, then you're the one that was stupid. So I let them, and it came back negative. And another couple weeks went by, and they called me back in, and they asked me if they could do a biopsy on my ovaries. And as it turns out, it was positive. So it was a complete shock, because no one ever thinks it can happen to them. And especially if there's no signs or symptoms, you don't see it coming. And then, you know, the diagnosis is I have to have surgery. I have to have it removed. I'll get rid of it. You won't even know it was there. I'm in surgery. She says there was so much more than she anticipated. That's why I figure it was a couple years. And you go through the biopsy routine next. You know, they did 27 biopsies, little snippets. And one came back positive out of all of them in the lymph node. So it's a learning curve from the time you find out until then you get to that point. And now you realize you need chemo and you need to be careful probably for the rest of your life, because ovarian cancer is a chronic cancer. It really never goes away for the majority of women.
Yeah, and especially with it metastasizing to your lymph nodes.
Yes. But even then, Ren, I didn't know basically what that meant.
Most people don't.
So everything that happens to you in the journey is something new. And it's something you store away. And you just keep it in your back pocket for the next episode so that you can draw from it and help yourself through the next episode. And so it's been a roller coaster ride for 8 years. And I noticed, like, this I didn't know either. In the beginning, I was in remission once for like 20 months. And I thought I was like the queen. And then it came back. I was on chemo for 6 months again. And each time that you're on the chemo, they do a different cocktail or they try a different drug and keep, you know, you on one instead of two. And they see what works. And you just feel like a human guinea pig. And you do a lot of praying and you watch your numbers like a lunatic.
That's what I was thinking about too. Cause I remember in the beginning when you were first diagnosed, you were stable for 2 years. And then
Then it became like 18 months. Then it dropped.
And it just kept shortening and shortening and shortening. And that, I mean, is an emotional roller coaster, you know?
It is. It really is. And so the journey continued. I picked up little tidbits. I would read on Google. I went on Facebook. I sort of found that those two things probably did me more harm than good. Mm-hmm. It gave me a broader understanding, but not for me, because I was BRCA positive, which makes a big difference in the drugs that you can take and the reactions that you'll have. And so, you know, Googling is not as good as talking with your doctor, but the more you're in it, the more you control it. Drugs, they know what's best for me, but I know what my body can tolerate. So I would be the one that would say, how about we cut this in half and give it to me in two doses instead of one big dose every 3 weeks.
And that's the importance too. Like, the longer that you're in it, the more that you know what your body can tolerate and what it can't. Like, you're the best advocate for yourself because you've been through it for so long.
Absolutely. And the doctors learn to learn you. Mm-hmm. They know that you will listen. Like my doctors know, I will listen and I will absorb and I will learn, but I also know what happened the last time and what this drug did to me in that one and what my body will reject and what my body will say, well, let's give it a shot. You do what you can with what you've got and you make it work, as I said to you, your whole life.
Yeah. Where are you right now in your current treatment, diagnosis? What's going on right now?
So, you know, end of last year, I'm now in remission still with the ovarian cancer, and yet I'm diagnosed with breast cancer. So you talk about a double slap to the face. That was me. And I was in shock because I didn't know if I was going to be able to handle this particular cancer. Like I watched you handle it. I gave you so many kudos. You know, I couldn't be there for you the whole time because I was on chemo on my end and the pandemic and all this other crazy ass shit. I'm allowed to say shit on a podcast. And I go through the diagnosis and I'm like, I'm actually laughing because it is so like distressing that my nervous laugh came out. And what the hell am I supposed to do? And I say to them, all right, well, I guess I'm going to have a double mastectomy because they're telling me if I have it in one, it's going to jump to the other. And I'm picturing like little fleas going from one breast to the other. And while all of this is going on, my numbers are going up showing that the ovarian cancer is back. So I had to change my decision based upon knowing my own body and its responses. Knowing that if I have a double mastectomy and the amount of surgery involved, I will not heal quickly enough to begin the chemo.
Well, it's funny that you say that because I know recently I was able to really support you with your sudden breast cancer diagnosis since I had gone through it only a few years back. And for those of you, obviously, that you don't know, like my mom had to decide whether she wanted to go through with a double mastectomy or a lumpectomy. And these decisions, as Brittany's mom, you know, touched upon earlier, they can be debilitating for so many different reasons. But a true blessing was I was able to use my experience with having, you know, a double mastectomy to help my mom gauge her final decision.
You were a tremendous help. But I mean, like you said, in many different ways, it's disabling mentally.
It's so weird to say, but like our diagnoses and our journeys, they are similar considering we're both on active lifelong treatment. Not to mention, like you said earlier, we have had so many past similar shared experience, the hair loss, the chemotherapy treatments, the side effects, surgery, even the quarterly scans, the emotional toll, you know, that this lifelong diagnosis can take you on. We, you know, in a normal world, mom, like mothers and daughters aren't supposed to have shared experiences like these. But do you think over the years, it's helped you and I to cope easier knowing that we could relate to one another through these shared experiences?
Well, we do well when we talk about this kind of stuff. We're very, very supportive of each other. Like you and I can talk each other off a ledge when it comes to waiting for scans, waiting for results, waiting for numbers, you know, other things. We, you know, we are the typical mother-daughter. But I will say that part of us is perfect for each other. And I'm at the point now where I was right. You know, my numbers kept climbing with the ovarian cancer. I had the lumpectomy. I had a PET scan. Because I insist on covering all bases. You know what I mean by going in the back door now? The PET scan shows nothing.
Woo!
So I took
That's a celebration right there.
I'm telling you, I breathed deeply and I thought to myself, The CA-125, which is the blood indicator for ovarian cancer, is only a piece of the pie that my numbers are just screwing with me. And I just have to play it out a little longer and stay on the drug that I've been on.
Well, I also want, I was going to mention that I want to bring to the table. So my mom has been on a chemotherapy for the past 8 years, as I said before. And it is just a miracle drug where it allows her to take breaks. And we're talking like 2 or 3 months here and there. You know, Mom, we always kind of talk about your trend where, you know, the medication works so well that it allows you to take a few months off so you can gather yourself, regain your strength, even like emotionally, just kind of clear your head, all of that. And then when you notice your numbers start, you know, to pick back up and they start kind of hiking up a little bit, you get back on the same medication and it continuously blesses you with these fantastic results where you have been able to do this on and off for the past 8 years. That is incredible. It is a huge blessing.
It made you a nervous wreck every time I went off. But I think you now understand a lot more.
It does. And it, you know, when my oncologist told me, you know, the data for the immunotherapy that I'm on, and she said, you know, when there is progression, a lot of those patients that have been on this specific immunotherapy can get back on it and it can continue working as it was. I think that was that true indicator where I was like, oh my gosh, like it won't lose its potency. It can continue to work. And this is what my mom has been experiencing for almost a decade.
Yes, that I've been fighting with you about.
Yes, well, because you know I'm stubborn, which is from my father. And I have to experience it firsthand. And it also didn't help that I heard from the horse's mouth, my oncologist. You know me. So I want to switch gears on, like, on a lighter note. I know we were kind of talking about leaning on each other these past couple of years because we can relate to one another. We've been going through similar circumstances. Well, story time. So it was a week before I was to start radiation, and it was a week before my mom was to start chemotherapy. And we decided to hop on a mother-daughter cruise to the Virgin Islands. And I think this is probably my biggest takeaway that I will treasure for the rest of my life. So first of all, in better words, we're being harassed to buy one of those like very expensive all-inclusive drink packages. And without skipping a beat, I asked the person who was very aggressively trying to sell us on this if they had a discount for cancer patients. Oh. And you legitimately almost peed your pants, not only because I had, you know, the kahunas to say it, but also the reaction of the woman's face. And that was how we kicked off our mother-daughter cruise.
Yes, that is exactly what she said. I was mortified.
This is what I'll leave you with this story. For those of you going through hard times, go take a cruise with your mother because I promise you, you will not regret it.
Wait a minute. You have to at least let me say one thing. My daughter drank every colored drink there could be on that cruise. And she took a picture of every single one of them.
It was like all the beautiful colors of the rainbow.
Yes. And then some.
Yes. So listen, even in the, you know, the hardest times, you have to do something that will make you laugh, that will make you smile, you know, creating these beautiful memories. Memories like that are important. And they help you, you know, whether you want to believe it or not, they help you heal in other ways.
They do. Absolutely.
So I want to touch upon advocacy for a minute. I know you feel very strongly about staying proactive. So can you share a little bit about that for our listeners?
I will always ask my friends, make sure you go and get your gynecological tests, see your doctor every year. Don't skip your mammograms. And I mean, it's just, it's so important to me to be that person after going through everything that we've gone through, Ren. It's just, you want to be inspirational to the people that know you and even the people that don't. Because if you could save one life, to me, that's worth more than anything.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, Brittany and I say that constantly, even with this podcast. You know, like even if we only have 5 people listening, if those 5 people, you know, have a different outlook on life, then it's it's all worth it in the end.
Definitely.
Piggybacking off of that question, it's obviously no secret that the BRCA gene mutation runs in this family of ours, not to mention, I mean, you're sitting here with not one, but two different diagnoses, and you're a woman who's in fact BRCA positive. So what advice would you give to other women, families who also have these scary like genetics that we have?
What I would say is nowadays, insurance companies treat it a little bit differently. If you have been diagnosed with BRCA1, BRCA2, it doesn't matter. You should be having mammograms and MRIs every 6 months. You should alternate. And I'm not sure if a CA125 test really is something you should be doing before the age of 25. But I know after the age of 25, they highly suggest you do it for the ovarian cancer.
Okay. Well, Mom, you've seen everything that I've gone through. And you see, you know, me right now as Ned for the past, you know, over 2 years.
Yeah.
What are your, I guess, before and after feelings on that, on seeing me, you know, even doing this podcast right now with you as a guest speaker? Like, what are your thoughts on how far I've come?
Well, I feel that you're a miracle compared to the diagnosis that I heard while laying in the dentist chair when you called me and they told me, and you said, Mom, I was just told I only have 5 years to live. And, you know, me screaming like a lunatic and the dentist trying to calm me down and everybody just, you know, the feeling that I had in my chest, in my heart, it was just a nightmare. So when I talk to you now and you tell me that you have the opportunity to go off of the immunotherapy and take a break and have a rest and there's nothing showing and your scans are clean, I just feel I am just so blessed, you know, to have a daughter that's a fighter. And I hope that some of it came from me.
Oh, it definitely did. There's no doubt about it. That's why we're still here. I just want to say thank you for coming on the podcast and joining me today. You know, I think hearing this episode, people can see the girl power that's just embedded within this family tree of ours.
Yeah.
You know, we've been through the ringer, but at the end of the day, we're still here. And I remember a few years back, we'd always worry if it would be our last Thanksgiving with our family. Yeah. But the years just kept coming and we just kept beating the odds. And we know better than anyone else that life will throw you some shit storms. It will. And what do? Well, we grab the bulkiest life jacket we can find, maybe a yacht, maybe a cocktail, and we get ready to demolish that storm the only way that we know how to. And what way is that, Mother?
Well, I mean, we just absolutely don't give up.
Damn right.
We take the bull by the horns and we shake the bull.
Damn right we do. Demolish the storm, take the bull by the horns. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners before we sign off?
Just never, ever bypass your scheduled appointments. Very important to Ren and I that we know we helped you to remember to stay well.
I couldn't agree more. All right, Mother, thanks for joining us. I love you.
I love you too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks everyone for tuning in. Stay put for a quick concluding conversation with Brittany and I.
All righty, and we're back. I'm really glad we were able to introduce you to our moms today. Very powerful women all the way around. And Ren, I really like everything your mom said about being an advocate for yourself and keeping up with your yearly scans and all that. It is so important not only to listen to your body, keep up with the visits, you know, whether it's to your gynecologist or to go have your annual mammograms. Both of our families have gone through so much these past years. And I truly hope that today's episode helps remind you not to sweat the small stuff, and to appreciate life in all its beauty, to be kind to people, even on your hardest day, to remember to count your blessings each and every day, because life is truly a gift. And most importantly, thank you so much for tuning into our podcast, Living Our Breast Lives. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Living Our Breast Lives, where we will share podcast updates, special dates, educational resources, and of course, health updates for those following our MBC journeys. Have questions, comments, or anything else you would like answered on our podcast? Send us a message on Instagram. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And as always, choose kindness. Someone may look fine on the outside, but you never know who's actually struggling on the inside. Until next time, don't forget to live your breast lives.
God bless everyone. Thanks for tuning in today.